and welcome to the Reinforced Running Podcast. My name is Rich Ryan. I'm your host. Today we have a great conversation with Spartan Pro athlete Alex Walker. And Alex has a background as an equestrian athlete. This is the first equestrian show athlete that I have spoken to in this space. So we talk about that a little bit, but then we talk about how to identify your weaknesses as an OCR athlete and how to conquer them. We talk about specific tactics for how to prepare at altitude without needing altitude around, and also the process and of discipline when creating a season-long plan and kind of the things she's learned over the years, because Alex has done a lot when it comes to OCR. She has top five finishes in a broad span of races, including Spartan Tahoe in 2019, the World Championships. She's been top five at World's Toughest Mudder, and she's been top five at NORAM 3K, where she was actually on the podium. So she has a great experience level. She's done a lot. She was super fun. Great conversation. I really enjoyed it. I think you're going to love it too. But first, I wanted to remind you about the Reinforced Running Strength Training Program. We have two specific training plans. One is for the runner and one is for the OCR athlete. For the runner, it is for that person who wants to get a little bit faster and wants to stay healthy. For the OCR athlete, it's the person who wants to improve their grip strength, improve their power output, and improve their transition ability between the obstacles. Things are really starting to look up for 2021. The gyms are starting to open back up and races are looking promising for the fall. So right now is a really good time to try to see what you can do to elevate that performance to that next level. And strength training is definitely one of those boxes that you can check off to make sure that you're doing everything you can to get the most out of your results. So the coaching, it's an ongoing program. It's 3 or 4 week progression, so you never plateau. And so you continue to grow and learn new things around your strength training. So you get a free consultation call with me so you can figure out exactly where to put this strength training in so that it fits with everything that you are currently doing. And there's no questions about like what to prioritize with the time that you have and just figuring out the correct blend. You get 3 strength workouts per week. You get 3 mobility workouts per week. You get specific directions, and you have a direct link to me through the training app so that if you do have any questions, we can figure them out on the spot. And most importantly, it's just straight up information, so you never have to wonder what to do in the gym. You don't have to worry about if this is going to work, what movements you need to do. It's all taken care of for you. You can just open the app, look at the strength workout for the day, and just get to work. So the strength training, it is $19 per month. First 7 days are completely free of charge, and right now we are doing a completely risk-free trial. So for the first 30 days, you can try these workouts for a full month so you can figure out if you like them or if they work into your schedule, and if they don't, you can get your money back, no questions asked. So there are 2 links in the show notes and also in the Instagram profile. So one link is for the OCR strength coaching, the other one is for the run coaching. So check it out right now. Okay, enough of that. Here's Alex Walker. We're here with Alex Walker. Alex, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. I'm real excited to chat with you and talk about kind of how you organize your training and how you've been able to prepare for a wide range of different races in your career as an OCR athlete, and just trying to figure out like the ins and outs of that. And one thing I do think about a lot when it comes to obstacle course racers is their specific backgrounds and like, how does someone get good at this? And like, what adaptations have they brought upon themselves from their previous life as an athlete? And I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone who's come from like an equestrian background. So like for you, what do you think that your equestrian show jumping background has brought as an OCR athlete?
It's great grip strength training because you're constantly pulling on the reins. But I guess it's more that, you know, your horse is an athlete too. So you wake up and you train, and they train just kind of like a runner does. Like some days are hard days, some days are easy days. So you kind of learn how that kind of training goes in that kind of program. So when I started running, which I didn't start till I was like in my late 20s, I kind of learned like not every day is a hard day, some days are easy kind of thing.
So there is a physical component with needing to the grip angle, like holding on, but there was also an education piece there as well, where like the training that they had translates to a human being's training.
Yeah. And even riding horses is very cardio. Like a lot of people don't know that, but even though you're sitting on 1,000-pound animal, you still have to pull on the reins and kick and hold on. And so that aside of jumping is just as much cardio as running is.
That's so interesting, because you figure there's got to be something demanding, right? It doesn't seem like anybody can just get up and do that. So like, is there a conditioning piece? So as you were training as an equestrian athlete, Is that the correct terminology? Again, equestrian
yes,
athlete.
Yes, you're
okay.
Right.
Okay, I'm on it. Like, were you also, was the riding the training part, or were you training so that you could be better at the riding?
So there's like strength components as well. So we would ride without stirrups to strengthen up your legs. There's just different things that you would do that would build muscle for your arms, your back, your legs, just as much as cardio based. Like I know that some equestrian riders nowadays, they do go running a lot and they do go to the gym to supplement when they're not on horses.
Hmm. Do you still do it?
I do not.
No, officially retired.
Yeah, definitely out of the game. I mean, I follow it still and I definitely like love watching videos online and I'm like, oh man, I miss that feeling because there's nothing like being on a horse, but it's an expensive sport.
I could imagine. It doesn't seem like you can just do it as like a pastime.
No.
So, and when it comes to the grip stuff, when you first got into OCR, was your grip already strong? Do you think that that did really help?
I think it was decent. I still like, obviously learning to hang on a monkey bar is a little bit different. So when it came to like opening and closing my hands on obstacles, that part wasn't as difficult as much as like learning to hang and swing and do things like that.
So like the fundamental of the strength piece may have already been taken care of a little bit, but then like the skill and the technique behind it is what you really kind of had to work on, because you do really well in those arenas of OCR, right? Like, would you say grip strength is one of your strengths as an athlete?
Yes.
Yes. So how to get to this point, right? Because you've done well in things like NORAM 3K, and you've done well, obviously, in Spartan races and Tough Mudders as well, but the also ones that are very grip demanding in the Savage races in the past, 12 months or so, you've really done a great job in. So like how do you kind of balance those things out now? Is it a lot of skill work since your strength was already in place for the obstacles, or is there still a balance between the strengthening and the skill of it?
So the one fun part about OCR is just as much as athletes evolve, the sport has evolved when it comes to the obstacles. So what was hard for me in 2014 or 15, now in 2021, is a completely different ball game. Like what was a difficult rig of ropes and rings back then where I couldn't, like it was difficult. Now if you look at rigs, they're completely different. Like Savage is adding lachets and they're adding that annoying cheese board that they had. So they're definitely stepping up their game, and NORAM steps up their game in OCR World Championship. So even though I have good grip strength, I still have to continue working on things, and it's never going to go away. But Yancey, who is my coach, does a really good job of helping me get that done.
So the evolution of the sport is something that's interesting. And I feel like I hear this a lot where it's like, oh, this sport, it's not as hard as it used to be. And maybe it's from people who are looking from a certain demand from the course itself, but like everyone's just kind of getting better, right? Like we're all getting better at the obstacles. We're all learning how to train for this thing. So like, what do you think this sport can do to keep evolving? Like, where do you see the evolution of this sport going in terms of like the demands?
I'm going to say this and I'm going to be flat out like blunt about it, I guess. So it's Spartan who has not evolved with their obstacles, while OCR World Championship, Savage Race, and those kind of races, Conquer the Gauntlet, have evolved with obstacles. So like if you go to a Savage Race, their terrain is not difficult. It's very much cross-country course-like, so the running is not hard, but the obstacles are very demanding. While Spartan does a very good job of finding very demanding courses for running, but your obstacles themselves aren't very difficult.
What do you think is, because they are kind of on opposite spectrums. Like to me, for Spartan, the biggest obstacle is the terrain, right? Like pretty much every race is going to have something that's ridiculous in it that you're not, it's going to be really hard to prepare for. So like, to me, that is the main obstacle that Spartan rolls out. Like, do you think that there is one that's right or wrong, or do you think there should be kind of a melding of both of them so that they both kind of push each other in a direction? Or like, what do you consider to be like the best like way to figure out who the best OCR athlete is?
Okay, so if I put like my personal part of it aside, because obviously I would love to see them have harder rigs and things like that, I would like to see them still grow with their obstacles. It might not have to be like a savage rig, but it is cool when they have ropes or something different every time. I know that they're trying to standardize things because they have some hope of going to the Olympics. I don't really know where their goal is right now. But I've always said, and I always tell people, where if that's a goal, it needs to be the X Games or something like that, where things can be different, terrains can be different, obstacles can be different. It doesn't have to be a standard, like the same wall, the same box, the same rig, things like that. I think it's cool when things are different and there's an excitement of seeing something new every time you go to a race. Like when I get a course map for Savage or OCR World Championship, I'm like, all right, where's the rig in this? Because now I have to plan if I have to run here and here and what I'm going to do here. And I see it in Spartan only works that way if it's going to be a cold race or a rainy race. That's the only time I really have to think about it. But if it's just a dry, simple race, it's literally no thought. Go to sleep, wake up, go run. Doesn't matter where the obstacles are at.
And that's like, it's turned into much more of a fitness competition then, right? Like who is going to be the best runner on hills or trails in between the obstacles, right? Because obstacles aren't necessarily going to slow people down. Do you think that the format will ever change? Like, what do you think of like the Spartan Cross thing? Do you think that's what I think Spartan Cross would be awesome if it was a Savage Cross, like if Savage Race took those obstacles and did like that type of format. Did you get to play around with the Spartan Cross at all in like Jacksonville?
I did not because they did it on a Friday and we were racing on Sunday. And the people that I did see play on it got their hands tore up.
Yeah.
So I definitely was like, I'm not going to go out there and be silly about it. I think the Spartan Cross is really, really cool. I think back-to-back obstacles is like super fun. But at the end of the day, the people that are paying to go do a Spartan, which is not the pros, like if you're looking at like the regular open heat people, they don't want to run around a course in a circle. They want to go out in the terrain and feel like they went up a mountain and back.
Yeah, that's interesting because you're right. Like to me, the appeal of something like a Spartan Cross is from a spectator perspective, right? Like it's going to be easier to watch. It's going to be, you can follow it. Like, and like people may be able to innovate how to get through the obstacles a little bit more when speed is going to be the main component. And maybe it's, they make it like mandatory obstacle completion or whatever they do. So that things can kind of get pushed forward. Maybe it's a little bit more exciting, but their moneymaker, it's the open waivers, right? It's the people who want to go out and really test themselves. And those are the people who are the ones that want the races to be harder so that they can go out and feel like they got their money's worth. Where the Spartan Cross, maybe it gets like other athletes involved. I don't know. Cause it might help elevate the position and like the spectate and like the spectators and get more eyeballs in on the sport. Yeah. Because you've done.
I felt like they tried doing that. Did you see that when they did the mile?
So
they used to do like this mile, like short course competition
in Spartan?
Yeah. 2018 or 19.
Oh, was this when they did, it was like a TMX answer kind of?
Kind of like TMX, like you would just run around a short course. So I feel like they've already done this and they're just kind of trying to do it a different way. By doing, you do multiple loops versus just one long, like super fast short course. But I don't know. I think you're right. It is very spectator friendly. But like if I was an open heater, I wouldn't pay $100 and something if that's right. What they're going to charge.
Because it's going to be expensive. Spartan's involved. It's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
Well, you've done so many of the different races, right? Like I mentioned, you've done World's Toughest. You've done well at Tahoe. You've done well at the 3K at NorAm. Like, what do you think? How do you see it evolving that way? Do you think athletes are going to have to pick a lane? Because like you've been able to show like that the athletes do have wide range right now. Do you think that with these other things that are coming or with these races that are going to be more grip specific versus mountain specific or terrain specific, like, do you think that that's going to help the sport grow? Or do you think it's going to like water things down more because the athletes are going to have to kind of pick different spots?
Hey, that's a tough one. Cause I think it just depends how it's scheduled throughout the year. Cause your top athletes can be good at any of those. I mean, if you really look at a lot of them, they can do the longer courses, they can do the shorter courses, they can do the grip strength, like your Nicoles, your Lindsays, they can do basically all of those things, including 8-hour races. So it just comes down to like how they stack them, because you can't specialize in, like, you would have to specialize if in one weekend they have three big races, like this year, like you have OCR World Championship and Tahoe on the same weekend.
Yeah. Cause like, right. Like, how are they going to spread things? That's so unfortunate that that's that way. What are you going to do?
So I really was going to like go head straight into OCR World Championship because I love grip stuff, but then someone put it in my head that like Tahoe would be a better idea since like I'm doing the series for Spartan. So now I'm just kind of like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Right. So like, what would you, at this point of the year, we're talking, it's April. So those races are at the end of September. How would you dictate the training from now or say like the upcoming weeks, dependent on which race you would choose? I mean, they're both mountainous, right? One is going to, like, the climbing will definitely be different. The terrain will be different, but the grip demands will be extremely different. So how would you change your training based off of like that goal? Would you wait or would you start now? When do you think you would start to kind of make that move?
So I already started my mountain training a couple weeks ago, just because Utah's coming up and there's a couple other races in the mountains. And that's just where I really love to be versus a flat course. But my grip training never changes. It doesn't matter if it's Tahoe or not, because the thing about Tahoe is like 2019, we got a snowstorm. Nobody saw that coming. And if you would have just practiced basic grip strength just to get you through a couple of things, you wouldn't have made it 100% completion through that course, because not only was it cold, but everything on the top of the mountain was absolutely freezing.
Right.
So no matter what, my grip training stays the same. And it's not even like about races as much as personally, I like seeing the growth that happens, like being able to do things, new climbing stuff when I go bouldering, things like that, or trying new obstacles. I train at a ninja gym, so they're always putting really neat obstacles up that I would never see at a race, but I want to get better at, just because you never know, I have it in my back pocket if they ever do decide to have it at a race.
It helps with that thought process, right? Because there's something, I know, like the mistakes I make in OCR, they're almost always mental or something where I can't wrap my brain around what's happening in the moment. Like if something is just off a little bit, like my brain breaks and I make a mistake. But if you have like that capacity to understand how to move your body under fatigue at a different level, like it just would probably make it easier. So like that seems like a good way to approach it. Do you have specific benchmarks then, or like, are there bouldering benchmarks that you kind of go after? Is it always kind of a work in progress, or at like the ninja gym, is there a certain move or a certain obstacle that you work toward so that you know you're getting better with grip stuff?
So when it comes to bouldering, I kind of just go with the flow, because you never know what kind of routes they have up when you go to the gym. And I try to choose routes that are very similar holds to OCR. I don't go like, oh, I need to go do this because it's a level up. I try to just find holds that are very similar to what I would do at racing type things, because I never get into like the little grips, because you never really do that. But as for like rigs and stuff, I just like to play around. My friends and I, we can actually switch the rigs up at the ninja gym. They, at Power Park Fitness, they let us do that and play around, and we'll go back and forth. And if I can do it back three times, things like that. But we try to find like longer, like whatever races we've seen, we try to kind of simulate the same kind of rigs at there so we can learn. The only one I haven't been able to do is that cheese one from Savage, because one, that was a great big surprise. I never saw that they would do that. But two, we can't find them to buy them.
They're like the only ones that exist. When those things break, that's it. Then you'll never see it ever again. No, those are the only ones ever made. What's the deal with those cheese boards? Like, how they seem ridiculous. I haven't done a Savage, but I mean, I've been following it. I've been watching these races. How do you get through that thing? Because it seems like it would just be so flimsy. And I know that rig, that last rig, that the race that you were at was like a problem, right? For like,
yeah.
Didn't that happen in the women's race? Like everybody just ended up at the rig, right?
I don't know if that was me. Sorry. Yeah. So the rig at Savage, Georgia was very similar to the rig that was in Florida last year. And I don't know if you knew, but I had gotten hurt on it. So I slipped off the cheese board and I was leading the race, and I landed on the front side of my ankle. Like, I never have thought I'd broken an ankle till that moment.
That's how you do it too, landing on the inside. Yeah.
So I stood up and I couldn't even put weight on it. But at that point, my adrenaline was rushing. So I was like, I got to keep trying. Well, you had to jump from a rope and then swing onto the cheese. And I tried a couple of times and finally I couldn't jump anymore because of my ankle. So when I went to Georgia, it was in my head. I ran up to the rig and because we had to jump to a rope to the cheese, I started like hesitating. Like the guy, the announcer was like, okay, Alex, jump. We're watching you. And I was like, I like froze. And I'm like, oh God, I don't know if I even want to jump right now. And I normally don't have those thoughts, but I think because my body was like, you've been injured before. Don't do this.
It's funny how like that, those feelings do happen. Like, even just something that's a little bit, it's a different example. Like I had like really bad plantar fasciitis for like a year. And then I went to this like movement specialist and he was like, oh, did you like sprain your ankle ever? I was like, well, yeah. When I was like 16, and he was like, okay, do this exercise to teach your body that it's okay to move your ankle into that space again. And so I did that. And then when I went running, the plantar fasciitis went away. It was like, my body was just holding me back. So I could see going up to something traumatic like that and just like having this whole block come up. But like when you were able to get through that cheese, is there a specific way to get through it?
Yes. So if you jump on it and you were to lean your body completely only on one side, so matching your hands only on one side, the cheese board actually will turn almost slightly. And that's what's going to make you slip off. So if you stay down the middle with your hands on both sides and just start moving across the holes down the center of it, then you won't have an issue. Is what I finally got when I got through it.
Does momentum become an issue then? Can you swing from those hole holes? And the holes are kind of small, right? So even on both sides are probably pretty.
So there's only two small holes and two big holes, but you can swing. So I ended up, if you see the Georgia rig, I skipped a hole. They had like a rope, a giant, like really thick rope. And my grip at that point was like really upset with me. So I lacheted from the blue cheese to the bar.
Oh my God.
Oh, so and you- like literally when I landed on the bar, my eyes, you could see me. Like I felt like I was like, I landed on the bar. Oh my God. Like I did a Hail Mary.
And then you had to lache again, right?
No, at that point I just had to kick the bell with my foot.
Oh, you could reach it with your feet?
Yeah.
Huh. So are you so at the ninja gym then, I mean, you didn't do that specific lache, obviously, but are you working on that? Is that something that you're constantly
doing? I do a lot of lacheing.
Yeah.
I do a lot of lacheing. I do a lot of like even one arm trying to just like, cause that lower lat is so important. And a lot of people don't realize it. They always, I see people do pull-ups, they kind of come down just slightly, but they forget that there's a whole lower lat that you really need to allow that to activate. So that when you get in situations where you have to lache or you have to move around, that all those little muscles are ready to handle that.
So you're doing that a lot through the obstacle work and because that can be a problem, right? Like sometimes it's hand strength, but I'm sure a lot of times it could be like that lower lat and just that activation, like through your, even like your scap and being able to kind of pull things down to activate in there. And that's why people get so bent up and trying to do the matching and doing all bicep because.
And lock offs.
And lock offs, right? Because this feels a little bit safer when you're all the way here and like you might not be able to like fully engage in that lower lat. So that's a great point. And so are you doing, is most of the practice then, because it could be different, right? Like if you're doing scap pull-ups, right? Like you might be able to get some of that scaption and down into your lat, but like dynamic motion's a little bit different. So like, are you practicing through this in the gym as well, or mostly through the obstacle practice that you're like making sure that you're using everything?
In the gym also. So I do a lot of like dead hanging off of one arm and then the other arm. Or when I do my pull-ups, I make sure that I sit for 10 seconds at the bottom before I go up again. I make sure that when I like lower myself on my pull-up that I fully relax at the bottom instead of holding it. That way I'm like
your shoulders come up to your ears kind of, and then kind of
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. And has that been a point that you've made trying to improve like that activation, or is it something that just kind of happened with this practice over time?
I think it's just come over time. I don't know if you were around for the Battle Frog days, but back then the rigs were worse than Savage sometimes. Not Savage with the cheese board, but like some of the other rigs. And so you'd have to do them four times because they would have two rigs and you had to do it twice. And sometimes they had an 80-foot rig at their world championship. And so my biggest issue was like being able to grip. I can move from obstacle to obstacle if it's a couple feet apart, but anything that got where I had to be completely at arm's length without swinging caused issues, that strength. So I like sat at a rig for 5 hours at Battle Frog Championship because I could not get through the last rig. I had a nap. I ate some food. I had rope burn galore. It was a really bad shower at the end of the day. But I realized at that point, like, hey, I got to go home and fix this. Like, clearly that wide grip and being able to move around with a more 4 foot span is where I need to be. So it's just come from things like that. Anytime I mess up, I usually go home upset with myself and like, okay, what do I need to do now to figure out to be better?
So in that specific sense, you found that when you're super far apart, the strength is, what would it be on your front arm then? Was that what you really would need to engage in to try to like pull down the bar wasn't there? Like what was the weak, what did you decide was the weak point in that?
So it was more like if you did like a wide pull up, like, cause they're all different, right? So if you're over here, you're super engaged in your like if you're doing like close pull ups, the moment you open up and you had to use those lower lats to be able to like move that muscle, men have that just naturally. Women do not. So that's where I had to learn that when I couldn't swing very well, because swinging and using your body is a big thing. But the moment I couldn't, that's when my strength would kind of fail me.
Mm-hmm. Right. And sometimes you can't count on that always if the conditions are bad or, you know, things just go wrong on OCR. So what did you do to shore that up? For that example, you went back and you're like, all right, I can't have this happen again. Like, let me make sure that if this case ever happens again, I can get through the rig in less than 5 hours. What would you, like, how did you go about doing that?
Wide pull-ups. And then I bought two ropes that you would normally like see on a rig and I put them wide apart and I went to the gym and just practiced being able to transition from the rope to the other rope with a wide grip just over and over again. Even if it was like 10 minutes a day, that's 10 minutes of my time that I put towards something that I had a weakness on.
And that would be my follow-up, right? It's like, how much are you drilling into the uncovered weakness while trying to maintain everything else or building something else? Is there a balance there, or is it something that's like, okay, let me just make sure I can figure that I don't have to worry about this wide grip obstacle ever again. Let me just knock it out. Or are you stacking it on top of the stuff? Like, how do you manage that?
I think training is stacking. It's just building that house over and over again so that when you get to a championship race, I guess, or like your big A race, it doesn't have to be a championship. It could just be your biggest A race. You can knock all those blocks down at the race. So I think it's really, I feel like OCR is like a Rubik's cube. Like we work on strength and then we have to work on speed, but then we have to work on our mountain climbing and we're constantly shifting through all the colors and trying to figure it all out and put all the colors together. So I think it's hard because the running element is like such a huge portion, right? So let's just say 70 to 80% of the course. So even if I can be the best obstacle racer, I still have to be able to run with all the people that are really fast. So that's where I'm trying to find that balance in between them, because I want to play with the big girls, but I also want to be good at the obstacles too.
And that's the thing, right? Because depending on where your background is, it's like one of them is going to be more enticing than the other, right? So then it becomes this internal battle of like where to spend your time, where you want to spend your time. Like I'm on the opposite end. I just want to run. I want to do all the fitness stuff. I just want to be like the most fit that I could possibly be. And then just like hope that everything else goes okay. and it's just a preference thing, you know? So like, is there a part of you that like needs to have those conversations with yourself, or are you pretty good at like visualizing all of it so that you're doing the work that you feel like you need to do the most?
I'm really good at visualizing all of it. Also right now, like I'm 36, my like competitive years are not like a lot. So I kind of throw all my eggs in the basket and like, I'm ready to go. Like if I have to do it all in the next 2 years, I'm going to make it happen and like see, give it 100%.
This was actually something I wanted to talk to you about because I'm 35 and I just turned 35 and I've been thinking about in terms of like age and our ability level, like we're probably still, you know, at 95% capacity of what we could have potentially been like in, you know, whatever our prime years would have been. But I'm thinking about age more now, like ever since 35, I was like, oh, huh. Maybe there is this a specific window. And even if like I can project out and I train as hard as I possibly can for like the next 5 years. And like, you know, there's examples of people who are doing well in their 40s or their late 30s. And it's like, but I'm still thinking about it. Are you thinking about it a lot?
I do think about it. And then I see people like Miriam and then I, you know, and I'm like, oh, I can still do it in my like 40s. Like, this is a right. good idea. And then I see people like Rose Wetzel as well. She's 39. And I'm like, oh, okay. So she's still killing it. But I also think like for me, I started running later on in life. So I don't have like a massive background where I'm not burnt out yet. Like I'm still trying to find that top fitness that I can be. So I'm still seeing gains in my running that a runner who already is there is not seeing. So to me, I'm like, oh, I can run a 6 flat pace for 7 or 8 miles. This is really cool. While someone who's been doing it forever and that's something that they're used to, they're like, oh, that's no big deal.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like I ran times that I won't ever run again like 20 years ago.
Yeah, so I don't have to fight that. Like I have my friend Hunter Russell, he's like that. He ran amazing times back in the day. So and you can't correlate those with OCR no. ever or trail running, but you runners have a bad habit of doing that. We're like, well, I ran this when I was on the road. And I'm like, well, you can't do that on a trail though.
And I talk about this a lot. I think that's why runners don't stick it out. Like the real fast runners come in and then they're like, I'm more fit than what I'm able to express out here. So why don't I go back to where I know my fitness can be completely expressed so that I don't have to run in the mud and change my training. So do you feel like you have like, is it a motivation thing then? Or do you think there is like a physical part of not having spent years and years training that now like there is still room to grow physically?
I feel like there's still room to grow. So I still get that excitement just like everybody else does when they hit PRs. Like, you know, when someone's like, oh, I couldn't even run a 5K under 30 minutes. Like I still get that excitement. I still jump up and down ridiculous and text my coach like, I can't believe I just did that, you know? I mean, I recently ran my fastest half marathon and it was a hilly course and I did it in 1:26. And like, nice. I was super happy with that. And I think if it had been flat, I would have been under the 1:25 marker, but either way, like I like love it. And it's just fun to still see that. I ran my fastest 5K recently too, just training, and I was sub-18.
Nice.
So like still seeing those things motivate me while somebody who's probably been pounding it on the ground for a while, you know, probably is like, oh, well, you know, I'm getting slower now versus getting faster.
So you're totally right that like a runner, like we, like the times that a runner had run or what they can run on the roads doesn't matter. Like when it comes to the course. Right. But for someone from your perspective comes a little bit later and some of the athletes who I coach kind of come to me this way and they don't have a running background. They're like, I just want to see what would happen if I ran sub 18 in a 5K, like what that would do for my obstacle course race results. Because like, you know, if you train that way, you're going to get faster at probably every distance and you'll probably become a faster obstacle course racer, even though it's not like a one-to-one like comparison on it. So like, how fast do you think for you in particular, how fast do you think you need to be? Like what would you like to see?
I think maybe a little bit faster, but nothing too crazy, because I think at the end of the day, the cool thing about OCR is that it is a equalizer. So a good example is you have Lauren Stroud and Renee, who just came into the world of OCR, and they are both, you know, 15-something 5Kers. But here we have someone who's a 17-something 5Ker, and they're hanging with each other. You know, they're shoulder to shoulder at races. And I think the technical running of Spartan, where we're having to run through mud and very different type of terrain, and then also pick up heavy things, equalizes things. So I tell people, like, don't try to, like, you know, yes, it's great to run big times and it's cool to win Strava crowns on the road and all of those things. But at the end of the day, that's not what's going to make you podium at those races. It's hitting the trails, getting on the terrain that's very similar to racing. I do a lot of trail running. I know with the pandemic, I did a lot of road running just because that is where I needed to get that threshold a little bit higher.
Yeah.
But I'm back to being on the trails. I'm back to using my technical terrain. Like, if you look at Lindsay, she spends a lot of time on the trails and she's very good at going up and down them.
That's a good point. And it's a good point to mention, like, yes, when you get onto the road, like, you can, like, there's a, like, you're, it's easier to work like your energy systems on the road, right? Like, if you need to improve your threshold, like, the road's probably gonna be a little bit better than a trail. But, like, once that improves, you got to put that on the trail so that you can make sure that you're getting those type of results that you want to get. Do you find yourself, because anymore, like, those times are pretty good. Those are, like, good times that you're running, right? Like, do you find yourself getting sucked into that at all? Or do you know it's a means to an end, or does it, or are you fighting that back and forth?
So I don't particularly love road running at all. So even though I'm seeing cool times, I'm like, oh, I don't really care. I want to be back on the trail. because the trails, like, it's really fun to see. I run a lot with a group of runners here in San Antonio that are marathoners. They qualified for the Olympic trials, and on the road, they whoop my butt and I'm like, bye. Like, when we're doing intervals, but when we hit the trails, it's a completely different ball game. So it's really fun to see them being a minute or two behind me when we do intervals on a trail, or we're doing hill repeats or anything like that on technical terrain.
So you're still able to see where the actual work that is going to translate, like, that's, like, where it needs to be. Like, you're like,
yes.
And do you just make sure you get onto the trails, like, as much as possible then?
I try to be on trails right now every single day, to be honest. I do a little bit of road running, but I try to be on the trails on a daily, maybe not hitting them hard every single day. Sometimes it's just to shuffle through, even though that's when I tend to fall down a lot more. you know, that's usually what I like to be. And it's just a great place and happy place to work on your form, because form on the road and form on trails are completely two different things. Because on the road, you obviously can elongate and shorten, but you have a different stride. Mm-hmm. So when you hit the trails, it's a little bit different. So I think you have to work those lateral movements and your feet too. Those muscles have to feel those rocks.
It's a skill. It is a skill. And it's something that you do really need to adapt around. Like, getting back onto the trails, because I was the same way, at least during the pandemic. I mean, it's easier for me to run on roads, but, like, during the pandemic, it was like, that's all I had. Like, I didn't have a car during then. All I had was roads. So, like, it was easy to justify. But then when I got back onto the trails, it was impossible. It was so hard. So, like, just losing it.
Heart rate, like, spiked.
Oh my God. And I was so exhausted. I was so sore and just, like, felt beat up, like, physically felt bad. I was like, oh my God, it's this, never do this ever again. So
and there's something really fun about when you're on a trail and you trip and you thought you were going to go down, but you saved it and your little heart skipped. Like, I don't know. I just giggle the entire time and I'm like, oh, I almost died, but I'm okay.
But we're better. Yeah. I took a nasty spill recently on just trying to do speed work over trail. And it was like, I sat there for a minute. I was like, okay, I'm not dead. This is not that bad. It was like not a great spill, but I still like did it. And I was like, okay, I'm glad I got this out of the way. I don't have to
worry. I like when you look down and there's blood everywhere and you're just like, okay, so stitches or not stitches. Yeah,
not sure where it's from. It's like my whole arm and my whole leg hurt. And there's blood in various places. So I'm not really exactly sure where this is coming from. I'll figure it out when I'm done with this run, I guess.
Yeah.
when you were running on those fast times, like, was that when you were doing the road stuff? Like, were you training specifically to run a faster 5K or faster half, or were you still on the trails that much?
I was doing both. I just one of the things is I used to train by myself a lot, and I would like on the weekends hang out with my guy friends. But one thing during the pandemic brought together is that Strava, people would go stealing crowns, and somehow some runners stole some crowns from me. I went back and stole some from her. We went to war, and then we became training buddies and friends. So then I started hanging out with these group of road runners, and I was having so much fun just hitting the roads with them, and they would go on 15 mile runs, and you know, so just they made me better with that. I wasn't wanting to hit those times. I obviously want to get faster no matter what. My goal was not a 5K or a half marathon. I just got better just because I started training with a group of people that were better than I was.
Huh. Yeah. I think with that sometimes, like, because I have the option potentially to find, like, there's runners around here who will be faster than I am. But I think about it in my head, I'm like, I'm not always going to train the way that they're going to train, you know, like there's going to be times where I'm just going to do something that's silly. I'm like, ah, I got to go carry this bucket. Like, you guys do your own thing. I'm doing something weird. So like, I have a hard time like branching out and like getting training partners who are outside of like the space that I'm consistently in. Did you have like, was it like, and it seems like you were better off from that, right? And like, do you think that would have happened without the pandemic, or like, was there a part of you that fought against that? Or do you think that's like a positive thing in general?
I think it was just a positive thing that happened, and it kind of fell. Like, I think God was like, hey, you need these friends, let's have them. So I was like, okay, cool. but you know, what was really fun about them is that they did try my workouts too. So I would go to the track with some sandbags and some buckets, and they would come run with me and do it as well. And you know, they're not scared to pick up heavy things either. So it was kind of neat that they would join my workouts as much as I would join theirs. But I only get to hang out with them every once in a while, because you know, workouts are different. So not everybody wants to go to Power Park and run around a course and pick up a bucket all the time. And sometimes I'm a little too sore from my strength classes that they might not do. So we just kind of find a meeting ground to meet in the middle, to where like, if they went on a long run and I luckily had a long run, I'd just jump in on it.
Got it. Yeah. Because that's, yeah, I always have that issue trying to figure out like where that balance is. How did they like the workouts? Did they like say that they were fun, or they're just like, I don't know why I did this?
You know what? They were really good at it. Like, I actually was like in my head, I'm not gonna lie, I was like, oh, I'm gonna take them down as soon as they pick up this bucket or this sandbag and do lunges. They're not gonna even sit with me. And actually, their aerobic engine is so amazing. They sat with me and pushed through the entire thing. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, here we go. And what was really neat during the pandemic, because there was no road racing going on, a lot of them wanted to come play on the trails. So it got kind of fun where we were able to get them kind of trail running as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's because that was, at least here, like the races that are happening or were happening last year, they were almost all on trails, right? Like, there weren't people that were going to congregate on the roads. And like, you know, I think we both have been pretty populated areas. So it's like, any races that was going to be on the road, unless it was something super small, just wasn't going to happen. But like a trail, you could spread things out because you didn't have to close a road. Like, if you were going to do waves, you can't close a city road for 24 hours to get like a full race in. But on a trail, like, you could do a race like all day and just kind of let people off and go. So it's interesting that they found themselves on the trails. What was something else during that pandemic time that was like beneficial for your training?
Well, I didn't work for a few months, so it was kind of nice to sleep in and get up and run versus having to wake up at the crack of dawn.
Pro athlete. You got to be a pro athlete for a minute.
I got to live that Nicole Lindsay lifestyle. Sweet. For a little bit.
What'd you do with that time?
It was just, you know, what was cool is my son, he just started picking up track. He's in seventh grade. So we ran a lot, and then luckily he went back to school. So he got to do track and sports too. So we just went adventuring. We would run in the morning and be on the river by the afternoon.
Nice. Yeah. So it sounds like the best you could do with that. And so when it comes to this year, then, like, how did last year kind of affect the way that you're approaching racing this year? Did you come into it? Cause that's another thing with the age thing. Again, it was like, all right, cool. When I was 34, I was like, I'm going to train real hard this year and have my best year ever. And then like, there was nothing to be done of it. So like, How is it kind of like guided you along to decide what you were going to do this year?
It stole a whole year from your life.
I can't get it back.
I know. Actually, because I was able to travel around and Savage was able to put on races, I had no problem with it because I got to see the training that I put on in the beginning of the year come alive with the Savage races in the fall. So it was really neat to go to all of those races, and they did a really good job with the pandemic and keeping everybody safe and, you know, COVID free. And so that was really neat. So I didn't feel like I missed out on a whole lot because I did get to put in some good racing. But then I was like, okay, so I did good at this. Like, wow, now I want to see where, like, I've done all this training with my running. Like, where do I stack up against the bigger girls, you know, like Lindsay Nicole and Becca and all of them. So I was like ready to kind of get back to the start Spartan world just for that reason. So I'm hoping that this year we have somewhat of a series because I am ready to, you know, close the gap a little bit. Obviously I'm not going to beat them, but, you know what? Maybe I have a race that is my day. I don't know.
You could definitely. Yeah. I mean, like, and there with this much time, like it's not the same season. It's not the same group of athletes anymore. It's not 2019, right? Like, so who knows like what's going to happen when the races start to really kind of get in and going. I mean, you've had like one or two Spartan, but nothing that we can really tell like what's actually going to happen in terms of like the growth and development of these athletes. And you've kind of mentioned that a couple times in terms of like wanting to see like where you stack up, like where, when the big girls come play, like where you want, like where you're going to be. Is that something that is the a motivator for you, or like what does kind of keep you motivated to continue to improve?
So for me, my motivator is just improving myself. And obviously the best way that I can see the results, whether they're growing or not, is to compete against those athletes. So it gives me a chance to see, okay, on this course 2 years ago, I had a 10-minute gap between us, and now we only have a 5-minute gap between us. And, you know, those kind of things, because I think every course is different, but somewhat the same. So I'm able to kind of just see that kind of play out. So I don't know. I'd like to just see some mountain races. That's really where I do a lot better, which is weird because I don't even live in the mountains.
Yeah.
But I'm ready to go to the mountains and see where my climbing is at.
How does that work? Because I was looking at like you do well at these altitude races that are in the mountains. Like Utah was good. I was actually looking at the results today. Like you did well. The girls who beat you probably are like, I wasn't like surprised. You finished like eighth there. And then, but at Tahoe, you were like fifth. And I know you weren't from a particularly mountainous area, not at altitude. So why are you good at climbing the mountains like that?
No, I think it's more descending. I like can go downhill really, really well. And then I've worked really, really hard on my climbing. So I live in the hill country of Texas. So everybody always assumes that Texas is very, very flat, which we're not. I live in the hill country. And then if I drive 6 hours, I can get to the mountains, which sometimes I do.
Just right there. Yeah.
Well, if I like go through a training block of climbing, I usually will go to the mountain to test it. And I get to see there like how my training has gone better or not, just because, you know, we get to climb at least 3,000 feet in 4 miles. But I do live in the hill country, so I get a lot of good, probably about 2,000 feet of gain sometimes in about 12 miles. Nice. 2,600 is my best on a power line system that's just hill after hill after hill, which I think is fun because you get to go up and then you get to practice your down and then you get to practice your flats in between and then hit another hill again. And I have an incline trainer, which sometimes during this training block I tend to hate because I live on it, but that's what you got to do to get better is watch Spartan races and climb on a treadmill.
Well, you just set it like just up and just go. Like are you doing specific workouts for your capacity, or is it just building strength with volume on that thing?
I do specific workouts. Yancey does a really good job of programming. Like if I tell him these are my A races, this is what I want. We'll set up a block to where I'm doing either an OCR specific workout. So we're mixing in that 15% and above with carries and, you know, pull up bar. I have a whole gym set up, and then some lifting in there as well. And a bucket carry, kind of like everything. Or sometimes I get on and I just grind it out and do intervals, at an incline. And then sometimes I just sit there and watch Netflix and just kind of relax, run as if I lived in Colorado, which would be awesome, but I don't.
Have an altitude mask on you while you're going.
Well, I'm pretty fortunate at my chiropractor office. They do Hypoxico. So I am able to go there and get on a treadmill and practice at altitude to get me ready.
They have like the room?
So it's like the machine, and then you have a mask, and then they set it at 10,000 feet, and then they give you like a workout. And then sometimes I go in and just take a nap for 2 hours with it on.
Huh. Because that's
where I got for Tahoe and Utah.
Cause that's the thing, right? Like if you are going to get, say, like a hyperbaric chamber or have one of those, it's like sleep in or just like one of those like head mask deals, that you can get that time where you could potentially acclimate as you sleep, but we're still competing at altitude. So like being able to compete well at altitude, like you kind of need to like run at it. So like you'll spend time at, like, what does that look like? Are you just like hammering like hills with that mask on to prepare for it?
So Joe, who is the person who programs it out of Stratton, he would program like at 10% or 15%, and then you would just do intervals. So he would want you to be at, like at first he would slowly take you up to 10,000 feet, right? You don't just go up really fast, and they put the meter on your finger to see where your oxygen level is. And, he just gets you to the point, and you will know by the end of the cycle when they couldn't put the machine any higher that you were like acclimated, like, and ready. So I didn't have any issues in Tahoe. I didn't have any issues in Utah also with elevation.
Yeah. Cause I do have an issue with it, and I just get them like, I can't breathe. And like, I remember at Utah being, as the descent was happening, it's like being able to breathe more as we're coming down. So you're doing it like once a week? Like how often are you doing that? Like for like 4 weeks or 8 weeks?
So when Tahoe, I think I did 7 weeks. No, 8 weeks. I did 8 weeks almost every single day, Monday through Friday.
So that was what you were doing.
Yeah. My job was super awesome and flexible. So I got to leave early from work. I would go to the chiropractor office. I would do my small workout, and then I would go home and do my regular workout.
Oh, so you weren't, okay. It wasn't everything there. So you just get like a small dose at a time. Huh. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So that's definitely gotta be helpful. And then, cause that's something that's hard to really account for if you don't necessarily have it. On the climbing, it sounds like you have a couple of your bases covered, and just how to like improve like your leg strength and just like your overall ability to kind of go up. Do you think the equestrian stuff helped with your descents? You said you're pretty solid at going down. Do you think that was any parallel?
No, I think going down is just praying the whole way down.
If I was on a horse, I would be like, I am praying that I'm not going down. It would not be a light, fun thing for me. I would be pretty sure I was going to die. Like I feel like when I'm bombing down a hill. So that's like
horses are really good. Ponies, on the other hand, when you're on a pony, it's like going downhill. You just pray they don't spin from underneath you. They like to buck, and they're not very nice as much people think they are.
I'll work my way up to pony riding. Till then, just regular horses.
Stick to big horses. They're big, like big puppies. They love to drink beer, eat food. They don't want to really put too much energy out if they don't have to.
Same. Great. So like what, but like there is a fear component of descending, right? And so what do you think that is? Just something that you had in you, like that you just didn't care? You're like, we're going down, so I'm going.
Yeah, I think part of it is that I train with a group of guys that like their descending's really good. So if they're going, I'm going with them. So I kind of sit on their hip, and if I can go down with them, and we're going together, and I follow their feet. And I've just kind of learned over time that last year at Big Bear, I climbed well, but then I would watch like Rose pass me on the descent, and I'm like, why are they so good at going downhill? Like, it's crazy to me. So one thing I did do is I from Big Bear to Tahoe, I did focus on my downhill running so that when I got to Tahoe, I could downhill a little bit better. Even though those are two different type of courses and downhill running, I just realized that they were just that much better than I was at the downhills. So I did practice that.
And the amount of ground you can lose going downhill versus uphill, like you can lose ground going, or you can like, you know, you can put a gap on somebody going up, but going down, like you can really get gapped and lose a lot of time if you're like not that strong at it.
I'm a firm believer that you win your races on the way down. Like I think the reason why, like Lindsay is an incredible climber, don't get me wrong, but I think what makes her dominant on the mountain courses is her downhills. Like, you know, Nicole might be able, let's say, out climber, but Lindsay's so good at going down. She's almost sneaky. I raced in Utah the second day after with her. And 1 minute we're together on the rig. Her legs were tired, obviously, the day before she ran really hard. And so she was just kind of taking it easy on the way up and we're like going down. And then poof, she was gone. Like I didn't even see her. I was like, where did this little ninja go?
What, so when you got better at it, were you, what do you think it was just consistent practice and just, or was there like actual like mechanics of it that you were trying to like think about as you were going down, or was it just like not thinking and just going?
I think it was more leg strength, learning to kind of that quad, that constant pounding on your quads, because when you do descend for a couple miles, it is a lot different than descending for a quarter mile, right? Like a quarter mile, it's full send, let's go. But if you do 4 or 5 miles going down, it's very hard on your body. And then that just constant technical terrain. So it was just kind of finding that stride that works best, because those little steps don't work. You got to open it up if you're going to stay with them. I mean, watching, what's his name? Not Ryan Atkins. I just went blank.
Johnny?
Yeah. Watching Johnny on his descent, it's just incredible how he just bounds down. And it's just such quad strength, and coming from his soccer background, I think helped him a lot with that.
So do you think your hill, like your hills along the power line courses, are that long enough, or do you need to spend time in those, like those, that's another reason to justify the long drive to the actual mountains. So because right, like I could probably get 2,500 feet of climbing in my neck of the woods as well. But the descents, I don't know, they probably would be a quarter mile at a time. So it'd be a lot of up and down. It wouldn't necessarily be like a 2 mile switchback where it's extended time that way. Like, how do you think you were able to kind of build up?
I do think that it helps, even though they're short descents. Like, let's say I only have half a mile down. So I live right next to a hill that's half a mile up, half a mile down.
Nice.
I specifically live here because of the hill.
Clearly.
I was like, I need to live by this hill. They thought I was really funny when I was getting my place, but they thought I was joking. And I was like, no, I'm not. I want to run up this thing all the time. But I think that helps, like going down it multiple times. And I think you don't stress the body too much. So I'm not trashing my quads with 2 or 3 miles. I'm just giving it enough stimulus that, you know, over and over again, and giving it recovery as I go back up, that when I do get to those longer courses, it isn't too bad. I still think you still get a benefit from it without killing yourself and not being able to run a few days.
And that seems to be a bit of a theme when it comes to how you're preparing yourself. It's like making sure you're covering your bases kind of like a little bit, you know? So it's not like, was that a lesson that you had to learn? Like, have you gone overboard in your training doing one thing before, or has it always been like almost moderation to an extent? Like, have you had to kind of balance that out?
That has come over the years. So I started OCR in 2014, and this has probably been the first year that I've been a little bit smarter with my training, in the sense that, like, an example, Savage Race Houston was this past weekend. I chose not to go, even though it was a 3-hour drive to it, because I didn't want to taper another week off and then race when I'm in a specific block for mountain running. So even though I could have gone there and won some money, that's not what I wanted to do, because now I'm thinking the bigger goals are more important. But I have been that person where I wanted to do everything and I raced every single race and mm-hmm. I've worked on every single thing. And I wanted to do 24-hour races and short courses. And Yancey's been like, oh my goodness, Alex, whatever makes you happy, I'm happy to train you. But he would also be like, but you can't overtrain all the time. So I'm slowly kind of, I guess, as I'm getting older and I'm 36 and my body isn't reacting as a young little 20-year-old would. I'm just thinking a little bit more like recovery is important and, you know, training blocks are important and these things and nutrition and sleep. And I'm kind of thinking all of that goes together versus like, let me grab as many apples as possible.
That's like an awesome, and that was something that I took when we were first talking, because I asked, is like, you're going to do Savage? I just figured you would, like you had done some, and you're like, no, I'm starting a training block specifically for Utah. And I was like, huh, that is like not very OCR like, you know, usually it's like OCR people, it is that way. It's just whatever opportunity is available. It's like people jump on it. So having the discipline to say no, because of a race that's happening in, I don't know, how long is that? Like 12 weeks, 16 weeks? How far is Utah? A while from now. So like you had the discipline to really be like, no, I have bigger goals and looking down, like, even this weekend, it would matter. Like I can't not build up to the place where I want to feel completely prepared without this weekend. So, I mean, that's a huge lesson. Like, and I was really impressed at that, because it is hard to do that. And especially in the OCR space, it doesn't seem like something that it is necessarily expected for people to do.
Yeah, I got a lot of messages. I actually was quite surprised right before, and everybody's like, no, Savage, are you injured? Is something wrong? And I text my sister and I'm like, Gabby, I'm getting like 10 messages regarding this. And my sister's like, well, you should, you know, hit it so like nobody spreads a rumor. And I go, what are they going to spread? Like that I'm pregnant? Like what's going on?
Yeah.
Like just like joking around. Right. And I'm like, I mean, what could really happen? And then she's like, well, they're going to think you're injured or something. And I'm like, but I'm not. Like, I just don't feel like I have to race all the time.
And that's the thing. It's like, because people's like, oh, it's a Savage and it's in Texas. Like, you're definitely going to be doing it. But it's like, actually, I have these other goals. I don't have to do every race. And like, I think that's something that people do need to hear and to like know that that is important, because like racing is fun, but like having goals and having like the bigger picture is also like important. It's hard. It's hard to lose, especially now where there are races. So it's like every race you want to do, like you got to do it, because who knows what.
It's hard to be patient, especially, yes, you're right, because now that COVID is kind of like opening up a little bit because of the pandemic, you're seeing people be like, wow, I have to do everything. And for me, I'm like, oh, I don't think I have to do everything. And I think that just comes with time, and you have to realize that it doesn't make you a bad racer because you chose not to show up to a race, right. You know, like it makes you either one, your heart wasn't in it. And I felt like I didn't feel I was missing out. So I knew my heart was in the right place when I made the decision, because I didn't feel FOMO and I wasn't like, oh my goodness. Like I woke up that day, I watched the live feed. I thought it was super fun. I watched people I knew race and I didn't feel like I missed out. And that's where I knew like my heart was where it needed to be.
It's just the right decision. Exactly. And like, that's one thing that actually COVID has helped me with, is the like idea of how time will pass and that nothing is going to change because of the time that has necessarily passed, I guess. It's like a whole year without racing. It didn't change that I wanted to train. It didn't change how I felt about myself from racing or not racing. So now it's like, it is easier for me from this perspective to have that type of patience, because like, okay, like, yeah. And I just had like an injury and usually I would freak out. I'd like everything would crash down, but I'm like, I missed the whole year of races. Like I can not train, not like run for a couple weeks and I'll be fine. Like I understand how time works. So that's cool. I'm glad
race or one missed race doesn't make you a bad athlete or a lesser athlete than you already are.
Right. So like, yeah, just keeping that, but it's hard, right? It's hard to separate those sometimes. all right, cool. Well, I'll let you run. I know it's been about an hour or so. It's been really fun chatting with you, but what are some of the goals this year for you? I know you mentioned the series, but what are you thinking?
Definitely the series, and I hopefully, you know, OCR World Championship or Tahoe. And then I kind of this year, I'm not really planning things out as much as I'm just like rolling with what I feel like doing, you know, because I, like you said, I've kind of done everything before. Like I've done the longer races and the shorter races. So I'm just kind of going wherever I feel like I want to go right now.
Cool. That's nice too. It's nice thing about, more flexibility after COVID. It's like, maybe we'll raise, maybe we won't.
Yeah.
But cool. Sweet. So I'll hit stop on here. I'll make sure to link to all your socials and everything. And do you want to just plug it? What is your IG handle?
It's at Alexandra under Ranger, Texas under Ranger. Just look
I'll link
up
to
my
it. I'll,
name.
Link, I'll link to it.
And I can't even say my own handle. I did so
the,
sad.
I did the same thing. The underscores are just like, I don't know. And then, and you also have the coaching program with Yancey, right? That people could check out in your profile.
Yeah.
So it's really cool
because there's an app now with it. So I can chat with you on the app. We have a group chat that goes on. So if people have questions, I love the app a lot more than what he had going on before. So if you do decide to join Yancey Camp, you don't care who you choose. It is so much fun on the app.
It's a train. I use Train Heroic as well. And it is like, awesome. It's a really good experience for sure.
It's like kindergarten. I love it.
It's great. All right, cool. I'll stop recording. We'll stay on the screen, but that'll be it. So thanks for joining.
Well, thank you for having me.